Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the KTH 910 AM Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network in North Texas. My name is Dave Palmer, Executive Director here at the station. Diane Xavier is flawlessly executing her duties as producer and board op for this program, so I appreciate her very much. I am going to introduce you to a delightful priest who I have just met for the first time, but he and I have been talking away, and I do want to thank, before the introduction, my dear friend Lourdes Hernandez. She and her husband Victor are good friends of ours, and she's the one that had emailed me and said, Dave, can you talk to Father Mark Malik? He is with the Melkite Eparchy, and I thought, okay, I'm intrigued. Let's go for this. And so Father Mark Malik is here, and actually the brother of another friend, Janine Gappa, she and her husband David. So I feel like I know you, and we have all these connections, but a lot to talk about because probably everybody is like, Melkite, what? Eparchy, what? What's going on? So welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Including my family.
they don't know either, huh?
They've been learning a lot.
Well, they can just listen to this interview and everything will be cleared up.
Exactly,
so
yes.
Before we get to the Melkite Eparchy and this, I know it's been a circuitous route for you getting there. Tell us about yourself. You grew up here in North Texas in Fort Worth. Your parents were very involved in the church. Tell us about your upbringing. St. Andrew Catholic Church in Fort Worth. Always good, faithful Catholic. When did God kind of knock you on the head and say, hey, I want you to be a priest? Or tell us about that, your upbringing.
So, yeah, it's a joy to be from Fort Worth. Three generations of Maliks, born in Fort Worth. So long history here. All of us were born in Harris Hospital, except my one brother, but we'll talk about that.
Black sheep, right?
He's a black sheep. Yeah. So, yes, my mom was originally from Kansas City. She moved down here when they married in 1971. And so I was born in 1972, and I was baptized. We started out going to St. Bartholomew's. I was baptized at St. Bartholomew's and then moved over. When I started grade school, then we moved over to St. Andrew's, which is where I made my first communion. I was confirmed, and then I went on to start serving at St. Andrew's, and I was a server all my life. Well, not all my life, but from the time I could start serving. Then went on to Monsignor Nolan Catholic High School. And let me see here. I was part of the graduating class of 1991.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have air conditioning for the first 2 years, and you couldn't wear shorts. So all the students go to Nolan now. They have a luxury.
A lot of sweat rings, right?
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Sometimes they let us go early because it just was so hot.
Yeah.
And we'd be falling asleep during class and in the afternoon. After that, went on to, and I got to know very well, I'll throw them in here, you know, St. Anthony's Books and Gifts.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Edith Myers and her son Richard Myers have established that store.
Mm-hmm.
Mary now takes care of it. You know, Richard died a few years ago. But probably outside of my parents, my upbringing, they were probably two of the most important people in my life, if you want to talk about my vocational journey, as they talk about it. Another gentleman was Mr. Mark Rist, who was a teacher at Nolan High School.
I've interviewed him before, yeah.
So I would say outside. But Edith Myers, even before Mark Rist, when I would hear kind of questions and concerns, Edith Myers was so well-read. She was an Episcopalian, but she had read herself into the church. And we used to get together with them, my family, and pray the rosary. Once they had the Blue Army at the time, and a whole group of them got together. And so they actually helped me. I remember going to Edith Myers. I was pretty clear in my head what I wanted to do for college, where I wanted to go. I didn't want to go get a business degree or anything. I really wanted a good classical liberal arts education, great books program. And Edith Myers gave me a list of three colleges at the time. Because this is early, late 80s when I was applying. And, earlier 90s. So at that time, still there weren't a lot of Catholic colleges.
Yeah.
So the three, Steubenville had just come back around at the time, and there was Magdalen College, Thomas Aquinas College, and Christendom College. Those were the four that came up, and University of Dallas. And out of all that experience, I went to Magdalen College
and
did my 4 years liberal arts, and I just loved it. And then
where's that located?
It's in New Hampshire.
Okay,
right, Warner, New Hampshire, which is nowhere. Where they give people kind of an idea. It's up in the White Mountains.
Well, at least you solved the problem of the heat from your high school years,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, I went to the extreme. Yeah. I went to the extreme where you know, like for 2 months, it doesn't even get above zero. I got frostbitten. I loved the experience. Beautiful falls. It was about 10 minutes from the Canadian border where we were. Yeah, so just gorgeous. And I would say that was the next most formative time of my life and my vocation. And with the help of Mr. John Meehan, who was one of the founders of Magdalen College, I went down to, after I graduated, I went down to Holy Apostles in Cromwell, Connecticut. I always thought it was strange. You had a Catholic seminary in a very Protestant, Protestant named town, yeah. Cromwell. The town wasn't really Protestant, but Cromwell. And I did 1 year there. To really decide on really this is the route I wanted to go.
Yeah.
And I met the Society of Our Lady of the Most Holy Trinity, and I was with them for 2 years. Mm. Went down to Mexico, went to Spain, did some missionary work, and then decided, well, no, this isn't really for me. And then I went on to a monastery, and I think maybe some of your listeners may know about the Benedictine Monastery in Norcia, mm-hmm. or Norcia.
Yeah,
Father Cashin Folsom. Well, I was one of the founding members of that.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I joined Father Cashin. Met Father Cashin when he used to come out to Magdalen.
Okay.
He came out to Magdalen primarily to experience the seminar method, and we just hit it off. And so I stayed in contact with him. So when he started his foundation, 1998, he told me if I was interested to come out. So there's five of us that went out there for the first experience. We were living in Rome, and I loved it. I've always loved the Benedictine way of life.
And yeah.
Its rootedness in the early church and the liturgy and its rhythm of prayer. So I went out there. So I was there for 2 years. Was there for the Jubilee year when John Paul II opened the doors.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other, got to go to Padre Pio's coordination, Edith Stein's coordination. It was a phenomenal 2 years. Study at the Angelicum for a period of time and the Greg. But after 2 years there, I really began to miss the United States.
Yeah.
And I realized, well, monastic life, you're first and foremost a monk, not a priest. And I really mm-hmm. felt called to priest. So I came back home. And in the meantime, I started hearing about Archbishop Chaput. And so I came back home and gave him a call. He said, come on up.
In Denver.
I went to meet Chaput in Denver, and we talked. He said, I'd be happy to have you come up here. And but in terms of the interview process and applying, they thought it'd be best for me to come up there for 1 year
mm-hmm.
just to live.
Yeah.
And see how I like Denver. So I did, and I went there and taught at a Colorado Catholic Academy. It doesn't exist anymore. And taught 5th and 6th grade. I loved it. But I reapplied to the seminary, and so I enrolled, and then I was ordained and finished up my 2.5 years there. And in 2000, I was ordained to the priesthood on December 3rd, 2005. And I was celebrating my first Mass on December 4th. Which is also my birthday, and I turned 33 years old. So I was, mm-hmm. that was a very, very special, to me, a sign from
yeah.
God. And,
well, let me stop there. Okay, what an interesting road to ordination. So now we're in 2005, early December. You have a birthday. You're 33. You're a Catholic priest. But now you're in Fort Worth, and so and 15 years later, and so how did you spend those years leading up to now? What you're doing now? So you're in Denver for a while.
I was
right?
in Denver. I started as a parochial vicar for 2.5 years at the largest parish in Denver. We had 22,000 people on the books.
Oh wow!
Yeah. It was every Sunday there were four priests, and every Sunday you do a different mass, and every Sunday I look out, it's like seeing a new congregation every week.
Yeah.
It was it was too large. Okay.
Yeah. Well, we got parishes like that here.
I know. Yeah. No, it's becoming a regular phenomenon.
Yeah.
But and then I was appointed pastor in Boulder at Sacred Heart of Mary Parish. I was there for about 7 years, and after that I stepped away. From and asked Archbishop Aquila at the time, Archbishop Denver, if I could go for a sabbatical. And I took some time off, went back to actually Norcia for prayer. And I really, I love liturgy. And I do love the, I do enjoy the academic life. So I discovered the Liturgical Institute. So I asked Aquila if I could take a couple of years and go get a degree and, figure out what's the next path here. And he was very gracious, let me do it. And so I got that degree in 2017. And then I thought, you know, one of the struggles for me with diocesan life was just living in Denver. I didn't have any family or any real community. So I did explore some oratories, because I thought at least there's the community life. And so I did the visit lived with the community in D.C., the Oratory D.C., for about 9 months.
I'm trying to put this map together of all your movements. Boy, we're racking up some frequent flyer miles, aren't you?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so I tried that, and I said no. And I've been learning more about the Eastern Church.
Yeah.
All this time, especially through my liturgical studies.
And we should say, you're Lebanese.
Lebanese heritage,
Heritage, yes, okay.
Yep.
Okay, so you're in D.C., you're checking out...
the oratory.
Yeah, the oratory. Okay, what's next?
So, and I thought, this isn't for me, so I came back. Actually, I was able to come home. Aquila just let me come home, stay with my father, take care of him take care of him. And that's where I just began to go all Eastern. I just threw myself into it, so I started really looking into it. And what really convinced me was I took a month-long trip to Lebanon in last year, right at the end of Great Lent, and I spent Holy Week there and the first 2 weeks of Easter, and I spent most of the time was with Melkites, and I got to know Lebanon. I'd never been there, and I just this I'm home.
Yeah,
I'm home.
Let me ask you a general question. When we say East, and opposed to West, what's the general distinction? I know there's a lot of particulars and all that. We have a Byzantine Eastern Catholic Church here in Irving, where we are. Father Christopher Andrews is a dear friend of mine. What is significant about a church being Eastern?
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Give me the abbreviated one. What does that mean?
Biggest difference?
What's the distinction? Because you said you really were becoming enamored with the Eastern liturgy, the Eastern Church, and I just wondered, what does that mean?
They put a lot more emphasis on liturgy.
Yeah,
and the way you come to God is they put so much more on experience, and experience first and foremost through prayer.
Yeah,
and the prayer is really prayer of the heart. So, and this is a common example I've been giving to people. As I reflect about this, in the Latin Roman Church, we put a lot more emphasis on the mind, memorization, learning. In fact, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is mostly a Roman, even though Melkites don't disagree with it, will begin with the creed.
Yeah,
the last section is the prayer.
Yeah,
if you talk to an Easterner, it'll be completely different. They would begin with prayer, liturgy, and then the creed. And you learn the faith through the experience of prayer.
Okay. Would you say there's more of a Thomistic lean in the Western Church or more intellectual?
Thomistic, but in general, it would be, Thomism is really part of a bigger thing called Scholasticism.
Yeah,
and that's when you really begin to see from the 1200s on, the East and West really kind of going different ways.
Even though the split had happened a couple of centuries before that, right?
Well, officially, that's an interesting. There, actually, to be honest, the split went in and out. Because we actually have evidence. And the thing about it, the split was between Constantinople and Rome. The Antiochian church never saw itself in schism with the Roman church. Mm-hmm. That began in the 1700s.
Yeah.
And we know that because we actually have documents where people were receiving communion in both churches.
Yeah.
Because even when the missionaries came, the Franciscans into the Middle East, the people would receive communion from the Franciscans, from the Jesuits, all. So really, the hard break with the Antiochian Church, if we can talk about that, didn't begin to the 1700s.
Yeah, there's so many different tangents we could go off on.
Yes,
and
I
could. I'm gonna have lunch with you someday and talk to you for 4 hours.
Okay.
Let me get because I know June of this year, 2020, is when your new position started. So we're just talking about a few months here. Yes. And so what are you doing now? And I know you were given permission by Archbishop Aquila, right? Aquila to do this. So what are you doing now, and why are you in North Texas?
So in fall of 2019, I petitioned to my own bishop, Aquila, in Denver, if I could excarnate, which is to leave the diocese canonically, and to enter into a diocese, or was in the Melkites called eparchy, means territory. I petitioned Bishop Samra, Nicholas Samra, who's the bishop of the Melkite Church in the United States, which is, it's just one big diocese, okay, because we only have like 45 parishes outreaches. And so it was all finalized in the summer, in this past summer, where I've been given permission to live in the DFW area to begin a Melkite outreach here to find people of the Melkite outreach.
And what kind of population are you talking about? How many are there?
We don't know. We don't know. Yeah, the problem is because there hasn't been a Melkite church here.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of them, a lot of the millions, like my family, just started growing up, just started going to Latin Rite Church.
Yeah.
Properly speaking, basically anybody who's from the Middle East or from Egypt or from Sudan, you're Melkite.
Okay.
If you're not Maronite, you're Melkite. That's it.
So many of our listeners are familiar with Maronite, our Lady of Lebanon, Father Assad. We've had a great relationship with them. Many people who have no background in heritage in Lebanon love the liturgy, what they do over there. So what's the difference between Maronite and Melkite?
Maronites follow, I don't want to get too complicated, they follow what's called the Syriac tradition.
Okay.
And the Melkites follow the Byzantine tradition. They were part of the Byzantine Empire.
Mm-hmm.
To keep it very simple, a lot of these distinctions happen because of political things. You have the Byzantines come down eventually, and slowly they became the protectorate of what we know as the Melkite Christians, while the Maronites kept more of their Syriac. I don't know how much we want to get into that.
So do you have a church? Where do you celebrate Mass? Do you have a community now? Or what does it look
we're
like starting, right
is,
now?
No, we're starting
from scratch.
This is groundbreaking. It's
but
just
you're saying
starting.
Mass every day. Where do you say Mass?
So right now I do it at the house, although I'm going to be helping out Father Chris at the Ruthenian parish, because the Ruthenians, the Byzantine liturgy, the Melkites and the Ruthenians, it's the Byzantine liturgy. So we have the same liturgy. Melkites, the chants will be slightly different.
You say Father Chris, which parish is that?
At St. Basil's.
Oh, Basil here.
So actually,
okay.
I'm going to be celebrating his 10 o'clock liturgy. He's out of town right now. So I'm celebrating his 10 o'clock liturgy this Sunday, next liturgy.
Oh, okay.
Next Sunday. So, but right now, no, we don't have anywhere to meet. So I'm celebrating Mass at home right now.
So you're starting from scratch.
We are starting. I'm even learning the liturgy as I'm going along.
So
it's missionary.
Tell us, I know this could be a really long answer, but get a little bit more about the Melkites. How is it different? You explained a little bit about how it's different from the Maronites. Somebody listening right now is saying, I'm from that part of the world, but I don't know if I'm a Melkite or not, and what does this all mean?
if someone is from the Middle East, I guarantee you are Melkite or you're Orthodox. It's the same church. Where the Melkites... It's the Church of Antioch.
Yeah.
So to make it very simple, in the church, there are five major churches. Every church in the entire world, every apostolic church is going to flow from one of these five mother churches. One of them is Jerusalem, but we'll talk about it. So the first one's Antioch, which is the oldest one because that's where the apostles were. That's where Christ is, right? Antioch. Mm-hmm. Antioch, there was you don't really recognize it anymore because the name's been changed as Islam's come through, they change a lot of these names.
Mm-hmm.
Antioch was right on the border of what is today modern-day Turkey and Syria. It's right there, right in the Mediterranean. And you even hear St. Peter at one point goes to Antioch. The place where the Christians were first called Christians was Antioch.
Yeah.
The place of St. Paul's first missionary for Paul and Barnabas was Antioch. So that is so you say, that's our church, meaning okay, then of course you have Constantinople, Rome and Alexandria. Alexandria is what we call modern-day Egypt. Okay, those are the four mother churches. One of the councils, early ones, I don't know if it was at Nicaea or Chalcedon, I can't remember, declared Jerusalem, because it was the city of the apostles, was an apostolic church.
Yeah.
So those are the five churches. So Melkites, Maronites, the Chaldeans, all these different Eastern, and even Constantinople has its roots from the Antiochian church.
Yeah. So really you are just steeped in history of the church, because a lot of things you're saying right now, people should know, but they may not know about these breakdowns of, I really had never heard that before, that there's only really five divisions within the church. For time purposes, let me ask you, and by the way, if you're just tuning in and saying, who is this intriguing priest? Father Mark Malik is a priest with the Melkite Eparchy. And as he mentioned, there's just one eparchy in the United States. I think you said 46 parishes. So what will success, with air quotes, look like, 5-10 years down the road? What would you like to do? What's your purpose and mission here?
So an outreach is the first stage to establish a parish mission, and then a parish mission's goal is to become a parish.
Okay.
That's their goal. So there's one that started in Houston 5 years ago. They are a parish mission. They've got some land. They're doing their fundraising. 2 years ago, a parish mission began in, or outreach, actually it's an outreach in San Antonio. So we're actually the third Melkite establishment in Texas, but our goal is to establish a parish.
Okay.
Which a parish means what? We have a church, and we're able to support a permanent priest.
Okay. My parish is in the Ordinariate of the Church of St. Peter.
Oh,
of course,
yeah.
It's based in Houston, and we're here. We're geographically in the Fort Worth Diocese, but we're not of the Fort Worth Diocese. And so it's similar in that regard.
Exactly.
Where is the headquarters of the Eparchy in the United States?
It's called the Newton Eparchy, or Eparchy of Newton, but that's is in Boston.
Yeah, it's in Boston, basically. Okay.
Yeah.
And if people have no heritage of Antioch or that region, they're, let's just say, you know, born and raised here in America, and they look like me, and they're just Roman Catholics, but they say, this is intriguing. Can they be part of you or a part of this? Or do you have to, is there a cultural requirement?
Oh, no. Because we're Catholic,
yeah.
If any Latin Catholic or any Catholic, baptized person is a Catholic, you go to a Melkite church just like you go to any Eastern Catholic church, you are free to receive communion and participate in the liturgy. And if it is part of, if you really find that this speaks, if this tradition really helps you grow closer to Christ, those can come in this discussion down the road. But you're always welcome.
Well, what
and I like to say, not even baptized Catholics, if sometimes for Protestants, or maybe you know a Muslim who's interested in Christianity, this would be actually, the Melkites would be a good outreach to people who are Muslim, who are interested in becoming Christian, because this is actually part of their heritage, part of their culture. And Protestants, bring them too. This is a different experience. This might speak more to them than the Roman Latin expression.
Interesting. Would you like your parish one day to be geographically in Fort Worth or just somewhere in North Texas, or what are you thinking?
Okay, so I have my plans, and then God has his plans, right? We always say. So right now, my thought is hopefully I can locate it somewhere in between Fort Worth and Dallas. So it might be like a 20, 25, 30-minute drive for anybody to come in.
You could be right here in Irving.
We could just be right here. Although I don't want to compete with Father Chris.
So
we'll see. I know there are several people who have expressed interest in the Keller area, and several people who are interested in the Arlington area. I know Bishop Sammer's just recently, he has a whole list of Melkite people who live in the area from Grand Prairie and so forth. So depending on the location of where the most people are.
And there's a website, MelkiteCatholicDFW.org, M-E-L-K-I-T-E, CatholicDFW.org. You can learn a lot more about that now. So I'm just curious. You remind me of what I was doing 16 years ago when my mission was to get a Catholic radio station. And I sat down one day at a desk and I said, I don't know what to do. I just got to start calling people. And you're starting literally from scratch.
That's right.
So how do you spend your days? Are you making phone calls? Are you meeting with people? Do you need funds? What can our listeners do?
Yes.
Contact you and say,
so
I want to.
So right now, I've been getting the word out to people. And so that was thank you for this opportunity even to come on Guadalupe Radio to just get the word out there to the local community. First and foremost is an outreach to any person of the Middle Eastern origin first.
Yeah.
But of course, it's an outreach to anybody. If you take that Melkite Catholic, my web, I go and Blake, no.
MelkiteCatholicDFW.org,
Anybody who's interested, if you go to that site, also the phone number and email's on there. People can reach me also, Father Malik at MelkiteCatholicDFW.org. Thing, call it. If they have any questions, any interest, we have no. In fact, I'm just now getting the paperwork done to set up a bank account for the parish. So, it's all of that. Yes.
So you won't be able to accept my large donation right now, then, right?
Well, we can take it and we can wait because it'll be done very soon. In fact, that might speed it up a little bit.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, hey, thanks so much. I could spend another hour talking about this, and I'd love to do another interview sometime, maybe a longer form one, because there's a lot that we didn't talk about that I would be interested in speaking to you about. But for now, we're going to have to leave it at that. Father Mark Malik, M-A-L-L-I-C-K, the website. MelkiteCatholicDFW.org. That's like Mel and then a kite like you fly. M-E-L-K-I-T-E, CatholicDFW.org, and you'll find phone number and email and all that information on there. And real pleasure meeting you, Father. Can you provide a blessing to our listeners through the radio before we wrap things up?
Again, thank you very much for this opportunity, Dave. And yes, I look forward to coming back in the future if it works out.
Yeah.
We can talk about anything. Yes. And may Almighty God bless all your listeners and anybody else associated with the listeners, all the families of the people here, and the radio and its great work of evangelization. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
All right. Well, if you're intrigued, visit that website, MelkiteCatholicDFW.org. And thank you again. It was a pleasure meeting Father Malik. And as I always say at the end of these interviews, if you have any suggestions, I mentioned Lourdes Hernandez, who said, hey, I got an idea, and it was a great one. So if you have any ideas for anything that's local and Catholic, I'd love to talk about it on this program. Just email me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. Again, thanks to Diane Xavier, and thank you for listening and supporting great apostolates and missions and upstarts in the North Texas area. Have a great rest of your weekend. God bless you.